Chapter 141. There was something in the attitude of her whole figure as he supported it, and she hung her head, which besought him to be merciful, and not force her to disclose her heart. He was not merciful with her, and he made her do it. If I know you better than quite to believe, unfortunate dog till I am, that you hate me, or even that you are wholly indifferent to me, Lizzie, let me know, so much more from yourself before we separate. Let me know how you would have dealt with me, if you had regarded me as being what you would have considered on equal terms with you. Apostrophe, it is impossible, Mr. Rayburn. How can I think of you as being on equal terms with me? If my mind could put you on equal terms with me, you could not be yourself. How could I remember, then, the night when I first saw you, and when I went out of the room, because you looked at me so attentively? Or, the night that passed into the morning when you broke to me that my father was dead? Or, the nights when you used to come to see me at my next home? Or, your having known how uninstructed I was, and having caused me to be taught better? Or, my having so looked up to you, and wondered at you, and at first thought you so good to be at all mindful of me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, only at first, thought me so good, Lizzie? What did you think me after at first? So bad? Apostrophe, I don't say that. I don't mean that. But after the first wonder and pleasure of being noticed by one so different from anyone who had ever spoken to me, I began to feel that it might have been better if I had never seen you. Apostrophe, why? Apostrophe, apostrophe, because you were so different. Apostrophe, she answered in a lower voice. Because it was so endless, so hopeless. Spare me. Apostrophe, did you think for me at all, Lizzie? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked, as if he were a little stung. Not much, Mr. Rayburn. Not much until tonight. Apostrophe, will you tell me why? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I never supposed until tonight that you needed to be thought for. But if you do need to be, if you do truly feel at heart that you have indeed been towards me what you have called yourself tonight, and that there is nothing for us in this life but separation, then heaven help you, and heaven bless you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the purity with which in these words she expressed something of her own love and her own suffering, made a deep impression on him for the passing time. He held her, almost as if she were sanctified to him by death, and kissed her, once, almost as he might have kissed the dead. I promised that I would not accompany you, nor follow you. Shall I keep you in view? You have been agitated, and it's growing dark. Apostrophe, I am used to be out alone at this hour, and I entreat you not to do so. Apostrophe, I promise. I can bring myself to promise nothing more tonight, Lizzie, except that I will try what I can do. Apostrophe, there is but one means, Mr. Rayburn, of sparing yourself, and of sparing me, every way. Leave this neighborhood tomorrow morning. Apostrophe, I will try. Apostrophe, as he spoke the words in a grave voice, she put her hand in his, removed it, and went away by the riverside. Now, could Mortimer believe this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, murmured Eugene, still remaining, after a while, where she had left him. Can I even believe it myself? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he referred to the circumstance that there were tears upon his hand as he stood covering his eyes. A most ridiculous position this, to be found out in. Apostrophe, apostrophe, was his next thought, and his next struck its root in a little rising resentment against the cause of the tears. Yet I have gained a wonderful power over her to let her be as much in earnest as she will. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the reflection brought back the yielding of her face and form as she had drooped under his gaze. Contemplating the reproduction, he seemed to see, for the second time, in the appeal and in the confession of weakness, a little fear. And she loves me. And so earnest a character must be very earnest in that passion. She cannot choose for herself to be strong in this fancy, wavering in that, and weak in the other. She must go through with her nature, as I must go through with mine. If mine exacts its pains and penalties all round, so must hers, I suppose. Apostrophe, pursuing the inquiry into his own nature, he thought, now, if I married her. If, outfacing the absurdity of the situation in correspondence with M.R. F., I astonished M.R. F. to the utmost extent of his respected powers, by informing him that I had married her, how would M.R. F. reason with the legal mind? You wouldn't marry for some money and some station, because you were frightfully likely to become bored. Are you less frightfully likely to become bored, marrying for no money and no station? Are you sure of yourself? Legal mind, in spite of forensic protestations, must secretly admit good reasoning on the part of M.R. F. Not sure of myself. Apostrophe, in the very act of calling this tone of levity to his aid, he felt it to be profligate and worthless, and asserted her against it. And yet, apostrophe, said Eugene, I should like to see the fellow Mortimer accepted, who would undertake to tell me that this was not a real sentiment on my part, won out of me by her beauty and her worth, in spite of myself, and that I would not be true to her. I should particularly like to see the fellow tonight who would tell me so, or who would tell me anything that could be construed to her disadvantage. For I am wearily out of sorts with one Rayburn who cuts a sorry figure, and I would far rather be out of sorts with somebody else. Eugene, 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 this is a bad business. Ah. So go the Mortimer Lightwood bells, and they sound melancholy tonight. Apostrophe, strolling on, he thought of something else to take himself to task for. Where is the analogy, brute beast? Apostrophe, he said impatiently, between a woman whom your father coolly finds out for you, and a woman whom you have found out for yourself, and have ever drifted after with more and more of constancy since you first set eyes upon her. Ass! Can you reason no better than that? Apostrophe, but, again he subsided into a reminiscence of his first full knowledge of his power just now, and of her disclosure of her heart. To try no more to go away, and to try her again, was the reckless conclusion that turned uppermost. And yet again, Eugene, 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 this is a bad business. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and, I wish I could stop the Lightwood peal, for it sounds like a knell. Apostrophe, looking above, he found that the young moon was up, and that the stars were beginning to shine in the sky from which the tones of red and yellow were flickering out, in favor of the calm blue of a summer night. He was still by the riverside. Turning suddenly, he met a man, so close upon him that Eugene, surprised, stepped back, to avoid a collision. The man carried something over his shoulder which might have been a broken oar, or spar, or bar, and took no notice of him, but passed on. Halloa, friend! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Eugene, calling after him, are you blind? Apostrophe, the man made no reply, but went his way. Eugene Rayburn went the opposite way, with his hands behind him, and his purpose in his thoughts. He passed the sheep, and passed the gate, and came within hearing of the village sounds, and came to the bridge. The inn where he stayed, like the village and the mill, was not across the river, but on that side of the stream on which he walked. However, knowing the rushy bank and the backwater on the other side, to be a retired place, and feeling out of humor for noise or company, he crossed the bridge, and sauntered on. Looking up at the stars as they seemed one by one to be kindled in the sky, and looking down at the river as the same stars seemed to be kindled deep in the water. A landing place overshadowed by a willow, and a pleasure boat lying moored there among some stakes, caught his eye as he passed along. The spot was in such dark shadow that he paused to make out what was there, and then passed on again. The rippling of the river seemed to cause a correspondent stir in his uneasy reflections. He would have laid them asleep if he could, but they were in movement, like the stream, and all tending one way with a strong current. As the ripple under the moon broke unexpectedly now and then, and palely flashed in a new shape, and with a new sound, so parts of his thoughts started, unbidden, from the rest, and revealed their wickedness. Out of the question to marry her, apostrophe said Eugene, and out of the question to leave her. The crisis. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he had sauntered far enough. Before turning to retrace his steps, he stopped upon the margin, to look down at the reflected night. In an instant, with a dreadful crash, the reflected night turned crooked, flames shot jaggedly across the air, and the moon and stars came bursting from the sky. Was he struck by lightning? With some incoherent half-formed thought to that effect, he turned under the blows that were blinding him, and mashing his life, and closed with a murderer, whom he caught by a red neckerchief, unless the raining down of his own blood gave it that hue. Eugene was light, active, and expert, but his arms were broken, or he was paralyzed, and could do no more than hang on to the man, with his head swung back, so that he could see nothing but the heaving sky. After dragging at the assailant, he fell on the bank with him, and then there was another great crash, and then a splash, and all was done. Lizzie Hexam, too, had avoided the noise and the Saturday movement of people in the straggling street, and chose to walk alone by the water until her tears should be dry, and she could so compose herself as to escape remark upon her looking ill or unhappy on going home. The peaceful serenity of the hour and place, having no reproaches or evil intentions within her breast to contend against, sank healingly into its depths. She had meditated and taken comfort. She, too, was turning homeward, when she heard a strange sound. It startled her, for it was like a sound of blows. She stood still, and listened. It sickened her, for blows fell heavily and cruelly on the quiet of the night. As she listened, undecided, all was silent. As she yet listened, she heard a faint groan, and a fall into the river. Her old bold life and habit instantly inspired her. Without vain waste of breath in crying for help, where there were none to hear, she ran towards the spot from which the sounds had come. It lay between her and the bridge, but it was more removed from her than she had thought, the night being so very quiet, and sound traveling far with the help of water. At length, she reached a part of the green bank, much and newly trodden, where there lay some broken splintered pieces of wood, and some torn fragments of clothes. Stooping, she saw that the grass was bloody. Following the drops and smears, she saw that the watery margin of the bank was bloody. Following the current with her eyes, she saw a bloody face turned up towards the moon, and drifting away. Now, merciful heaven be thanked for that old time, and grant, O blessed Lord, that through thy wonderful workings it may turn to good at last. To whomsoever the drifting face belongs, be it man's or woman's, help my humble hands, Lord God, to raise it from death, and restore it to someone to whom it must be dear. It was thought, fervently thought, but not for a moment did the prayer check her. She was away before it welled up in her mind, away, swift and true, yet steady above all, for without steadiness it could never be done, to the landing place under the willow tree, where she also had seen the boat lying moored among the stakes. A sure touch of her old practiced hand, a sure step of her old practiced foot, a sure light balance of her body, and she was in the boat. A quick glance of her practiced eye showed her, even through the deep dark shadow, the skulls in a rack against the red brick garden wall. Another moment, and she had cast off, taking the line with her, and the boat had shot out into the moonlight, and she was rowing down the stream as never other woman rowed on English water. Intently over her shoulder, without slackening speed, she looked ahead for the driving face. She passed the scene of the struggle yonder it was, on her left, well over the boat's stern she passed on her right, the end of the village street, a hilly street, that almost dipped into the river. Its sounds were growing faint again, and she slackened, looking as the boat drove, everywhere, everywhere, for the floating face. She merely kept the boat before the stream now, and rested on her oars, knowing well that, if the face were not soon visible, it had gone down, and she would overshoot it. An untrained sight would never have seen by the moonlight what she saw at the length of a few strokes astern. She saw the drowning figure rise to the surface, slightly struggle, and as if by instinct turn over on its back to float. Just so had she first dimly seen the face which she now dimly saw again. Firm of look and firm of purpose, she intently watched its coming on, until it was very near. Then, with a touch unshipped her sculls, and crept aft in the boat, between kneeling and crouching. Once, she let the body evade her, not being sure of her grasp. Twice, and she had seized it by its bloody hair. It was insensible, if not virtually dead. It was mutilated, and streaked the water all about it with dark red streaks. As it could not help itself, it was impossible for her to get it on board. She bent over the stern, to secure it with the line, and then the river and its shores rang to the terrible cry she uttered. But, as if possessed by supernatural spirit and strength, she lashed it safe, resumed her seat, and rowed in, desperately, for the nearest shallow water, where she might run the boat aground. Desperately, but not wildly, for she knew that, if she lost distinctness of intention, all was lost and gone. She ran the boat ashore, went into the water, released him from the line, and by main strength lifted him in her arms, and laid him in the bottom of the boat. He had fearful wounds upon him, and she bound them up with her dress torn in two strips. Else, supposing him to be still alive, she foresaw that he must bleed to death, before he could be landed at his inn, which was the nearest place for succor. This done very rapidly, she kissed his disfigured forehead, looked up in anguish to the stars, and blessed him and forgave him, if she had anything to forgive. Apostrophe it was only in that instant that she thought of herself, and then she thought of herself only for him. Now, merciful heaven be thanked for that old time, enabling me, without a wasted moment, to have got the boat afloat again, and to row back against the stream. And grant, O blessed Lord God, that through poor me, he may be raised from death, and preserved to someone else to whom he may be dear one day, though never. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.